Welcome in. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, the midday show with Andy and Randy with you here on a Trillville Thursday. Thank you so much for being with us. A lot to get into over the next 3 hours. Abe Gordon filling in for Randy again today and tomorrow. Randy will be back on Monday after what has been, via social media, what looks like an incredible tropical vacation for the McMichael family. So we'll get Randy back in here on Monday. But a lot to get to over the next 3 hours. In just a couple of minutes from right now, Falcons special teams coordinator Marquise Williams is going to join us. Obviously, we'll talk to him about sort of turning the page from what happened on Sunday against Seattle, getting ready for another divisional opponent on Sunday against Tampa. And I don't know, his thoughts on the new kickoff rule and all kinds of different special teams related stuff with him in just a few minutes. Like we just mentioned, Brian Bohannon, the head coach of the Kennesaw State football team, going to join us in the 12 o'clock hour. Incredible win for them last night. First win of the season, first loss of the season for Liberty. The finish was insane. Just a lot of really cool storylines there. So we'll get him in here in the noon hour. Smoke and Joe Patrick in the 1 o'clock hour to talk Falcons as well. But first and foremost, good morning to you, Abe. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, fun night last night. Hawks obviously get off to a good start. And then the Kennesaw State timeline with the Hawks was real tight. So big two TV night.
Luckily, you got four TVs.
I do.
So you're able to accomplish both of those watches. Yeah, the Hawks 1-0. That's what you do. You gotta win.
Can't go 82-0 without going
1-0. Can't go 82-0 without going 1-0. And you can't have a good record if you don't beat teams like the Brooklyn Nets. They did last night. A fun game, close late, 121-16. Certainly a lot to be excited about. Trae Young with a Trae Young-esque game, 30 points, 12 assists, just absolutely spoon-feeding guys in the lane. Just pass after pass on a platter to get guys easy finishes, which is something we've seen from Trae for years, but it never fails to be entertaining or impressive the way that he's able to find his teammates and make it easy for them. Our first taste of Dyson Daniels in 35 minutes, 15 points, 5 rebounds, great defense, that hilarious moment where he got clotheslined and then just sort of like coldly and almost like psychopathically walked up to Nick Claxton and was like, "Hey man, don't do that again." And then Claxton gets run out of the game. I've never seen someone less emotional about getting clotheslined in full speed than Dyson Daniels was last night.
There's like a cool, calm mentality that goes with that level of confidence of like, I'm going to walk up to this dude. I'm going to make sure he knows how I feel about it. And I ain't worried one little bit because I know he ain't going to hit me.
Well, yeah, no one's going to hit anybody. He knows that for sure.
Does he, though?
When's the last time somebody hit anybody in the NBA?
I don't know. Last year, Draymond Green.
Who did he hit?
I don't know. Someone.
Oh, he choked out Rudy Gobert.
That too. Yeah,
but okay. So, like, save for like 3 or 4 guys.
No, I mean, probably all right. Dylan Brooks probably hit someone.
Like when they weren't looking, you know, below the belt.
But yeah, no, like there's a level of what we saw last night that this team didn't have last year.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
I think we saw some comments after the game. I know Trae made some comments as well. Like, there was a level of got your back, we're going to fight for each other. And I don't mean basketball-wise. I mean, look, everyone keeps throwing Solomon Hill at me.
Okay.
With, we need the level of toughness that Solomon Hill brought a couple of years ago. And the argument was you didn't have that last year. Mm-hmm. I think it's safe to say one game in, you have that. You may not have much else. Like, we'll obviously play out the season and see what you have on the floor. But you at least have that, which I think is, Bunk, this is going to be a wild thing to say one game in.
Yeah, let's
it's already brought this team closer together.
Okay. Let's put a pin in that one. We'll get back. We're we're drastically reacting to one game of an 82-game schedule, which is what is – that's fine. That's what sports do, and it's
what
all
happens.
Right. They won last night. That's what's most important. They're 1-0. We'll get back into that in about 15 minutes and what's trending and let you hear some highlights and all of that. Certainly react to the Hawks' win. The Falcons looking to go 4-0 in division, 2-0 this season against Tampa coming up on Sunday. Special teams coordinator Marquise Williams joins the show right now. Coach, how are you? Thanks for the time.
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing today?
Doing awesome. Obviously, looking ahead to the game on Sunday and looking forward to it for sure. I wonder, obviously, someone who's there every single day and is around these guys, what's the energy like this week, maybe coming off of the performance on Sunday versus what the energy may have been like the last couple of weeks with some of those performances?
Well, you know, the energy is great around the building because we understand that everything's still right in front of us. You know, unfortunately, we had a tough loss this past weekend, but those are opportunities for us to grow and to get better. And how we look at it is like we have opportunities in front of us. Win, lose, or draw, we have opportunities to get better as a team, as an organization, and as individuals. So we're excited about this week going down to Tampa and, you know, getting another game under our belt to go 1-0.
Coach Williams, I am a special teams nerd for whatever reason, and I was watching various football games this weekend. We had what I would consider maybe the best onside kick I've seen all year, a recovery, and then probably the worst one, a ball that spiraled 4 yards away from where the kicker towed it. How much onside kick preparation and practice are you guys doing? I mean, this is a team that has played in a bunch of one-possession close games, and certainly you could imagine there may be an opportunity where you either have to defend or recover an onside kick. But how much are you guys working on that actively week in, week out?
Oh, we work it every week. We work our hands team, which is the team trying to receive the onside kick, and on our must onside kick team. We work that every week, and our goal and our mindset is we'd rather be prepared without the opportunity than unprepared with the opportunity. So those are critical plays to either seal the game with us recovering the kick or to give our offense another opportunity to put points on the board when you're coming back from a game. But those plays are game-changing plays, and those are things we work on because the rules are way different now because of the onside kick play compared to the new kickoff. So our guys understand their alignment, their assignment, who plays the ball, who blocks, who goes and gets the ball on the kickoff team. All those little details add to big results, and you can see it came up in the Baltimore-Tampa Bay game where Tampa Bay was able to get an extra possession. And then you talk about the San Fran game where you put yourself an opportunity to try to come back versus Kansas City, and then the kick doesn't go 5 yards, and it's like a huge buzzkill. So those are opportunities that we work all the time. And then, you know, it's unfortunate you try not to be in those situations as an onside kick team, but you got to go win those downs. And then as a hands team, we got to go as a one-play mentality so we can end the game and get, you know, go in the locker room with a victory.
How does a kicker decide what type of onside kick he likes? Like, you guys try a bunch of them out in the summer and whichever one works best? Because there's the one that, like, kind of starts low, it takes the high hop. There's the sidewinder. Mm-hmm. Like, there's all kinds of different styles of that kick. How does a kicker decide on the one that he likes and goes with in-game?
Oh, well, let's say we got an hour right now to talk about this. I'm joking. We don't have an hour.
We can go as long as you want.
Yeah, I'll just miss practice. It's all good. But you, when it comes to this kick, it's a big correlation to, like, what can your kicker do? What kind of kicks can they execute? And then within those kicks, you want to look at how they protect, how they block up certain coverages, certain alignments, and you want to see how the hands team, the opponent, the return team, how they align and where are the weaknesses and where's the gaps where you can try to create chaos and try to get the ball back. Because with the new play, it's kind of hard to recover a kick.
Right.
So any opportunity you could create any type of confusion or chaos or uncertainty to the opponent and it matches well with the kick, those are the type of kicks that we use. So week in and week out, we have a couple of different kicks that we carry with us, a couple of different formations, and it all matches up to what they do, and we try to put our players in the best position to go make those plays. So it's really player-driven and opponent-driven.
Atlanta Falcons special teams coordinator Marquise Williams joining us here on the Midday Show on the WaitFor.com hotline. I have one more onside kick question. I'm sorry. I told you I was a special teams nerd. So, like, just over the last, let's say, 10 years – and look, I watch like streamers to try and keep myself young, and there's a term called like the new meta, right? Like there's a new meta, like it's the new trendy thing that maybe game developers haven't, responded to. Is there a new meta over the last 10 years of onside kick, a trend that you see maybe working either to help recover more often or to prevent more often, anything like that?
Well, I think there's always fads and there's always different things that you see throughout the NFL. Within the last, I've been in the NFL, this is year 9, and the kickoff rules changed probably 6 or 7 times since I've been in the NFL. Whether you talk about the regular kickoff or onside kick, you used to have a running head start to go recover the kick. You could line up in an overload front, like 6x4 or 4x6. You could motion. Now it's just 5x5. Nobody can move. Ball's kicked. And there's more offside penalties than there are recoveries. But I think one of the biggest trends that you've seen in the last couple of years is teams used to see like the little high hop, the spike, where they hit the ball high and then the guy has to go catch it and he gets flipped and it's just chaos. Now you're seeing a lot more of the ball being on the ground. So you see the kickers take the ball, don't use a tee, put the ball flat on the ground, kind of like what San Fran's trying to do, and they spin the ball. Mm-hmm. And it's like a slow play where everybody's waiting around trying to see if the ball goes 10 yards, and right when it goes 10 yards or if it's close to the sideline, they're getting on it. So they're just – teams are trying to find different ways to put stress on the hands team on how to recover it. But putting the ball, not using the tee, has been the biggest trend I've seen.
Yeah, in your tenure, the kickoff rule has probably changed more than it has in 70 years in the NFL.
Correct.
Because when this rule changed in the summer, and we heard about it and talked about it, there was a lot of hype about how much excitement it could bring and how different it was going to be. Have you been surprised at sort of how little it's really impacted? I know it's different, but I don't know how many more return opportunities we're really seeing. Have you been surprised at how little it's really changed that?
I wouldn't say I'm not surprised. I mean, it's something new. So like starting off, we're just in the second quarter of the season. Mm-hmm. Everybody's expecting all these big returns and touchdowns, but it's new to the players, it's new to the coaches, it's new to the kickers, it's new to the returners. So anytime you try something new, you're not going to have the immediate response or the results that you desire and want. But I do say this, our team and teams throughout the NFL are getting more adaptable and adjusting to different things and trying different modalities and different teachings, different techniques. And I think the play is going to help us. You use the word impact. I think this play is impacting the game because of the field position. Mm-hmm. You know, teams are, before touchbacks are at the 25, and you use the term, it's cliche, it's a game of inches. Now the touchback's at the 30. And now with teams getting the ball at the 30-yard line on the touchback, you gain one first down, you're already at midfield. Mm-hmm. And now with analytics, teams are going for it more. Teams have stronger field goal kickers. They're kicking more 50-yard field goals. So it's a direct correlation to offenses, what they're doing with field position. And then you're starting to see a less amount of number of punts because of that. So it has impacted the game. It just hasn't impacted the game in the way fans think of it as touchdowns and, you know, big returns. It's still correlated to, like, how many times teams are punting. Are they going for it? Are they kicking field goals? So it's been impactful, and it's changing the game. It's just not in the way that fans are seeing it kind of right now.
Do you feel like analytics have kind of been unfair to the special teams coordinator? Because it feels like it's more go for it, less kick. It's more go for two, less extra point. You know what I mean? Like a lot of times where your unit would be out there doing something, now it's like, we're going to keep you guys over here. We're going to go for it. Feels like the analytics are a little bit unfair to the special teams guys.
I wouldn't say it's unfair. I just say it just changes the game. Yeah. You have analytics, but at the end of the day, as a team, you still have to make that decision.
Right.
Sometimes you go with analytics, sometimes you go against it. Let's say you go for two. Let's say it's a 1-point game, and you go for two to try to have the lead rather than kick the PAT. Well, you don't know what's going to happen on the next defensive possession. We get a stop. Now we kick a field goal, win the game. Special teams wins the game. So there's always different situations you can take certain chances on or make certain decisions, but when you make those decisions, understand how the domino effect can affect the game later on. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, you still have opportunities to win games on special teams, whether it's a punt, whether it's going for it, and then now you go for it, now you have short field, now your punting team has to go out there. What's the decision you got to make? Do we have to rush? Do we rush? Oh, we go and block the punt because we went for it earlier on in the game. Or we went for two, and now we got to go win this game with a game-winning field goal.
Right.
So I always look at the positive aspect and how on special teams can we win those plays. We're not counting the plays. We want to make those plays count.
Mm-hmm. Coach, I got to ask you a final question for me. We saw it take place overseas. Cole Kmet win special teams player of the week as an emergency long snapper. You never want any injuries. But if we had one, who was the Falcons' emergency long snapper?
We actually have a couple. I don't want to put their names out there right now, but we work that each and every
Got
week. We have a couple of long snappers. We have guys that could kick off. Oh. We have a bunch of backup returners. We have guys that could punt. So those are those crisis management plans. We work those each and every week, and it goes back to when those guys go out there in those situations, which you don't want to happen, those guys are prepared because they have reps that they put in the bank. They had those weekly deposits, and now when they go out there, everybody, all 11 men on the field, everybody on the sideline are super confident because they've worked at it, and then they're going to go out there and execute at the highest level possible. But big credit to Cole Kmet.
No,
he scores a touchdown, and right after he scores a touchdown, you can see Mercedes Lewis run up to him, tell him that he has to snap, and he had five successful snaps.
Right.
So those are that's awesome to see, and those are great examples to use for our team when we talk about our readiness and how we prepare each and every week to go win games.
Like, obviously you're not going to tell us who the backup kicker would be, but can you tell us somebody who people would be surprised to know can kick, like is a better kicker than people would think that he would be?
Ooh, I would say Tyler Algier. He could kick.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Now, is he consistent? That's for you guys to decide, but he can't kick.
All right. I like it. Hey, we appreciate the time. Thank you very much.
All right, you guys take care. Have a great day.
Marquise Williams there, Atlanta Falcons special teams coordinator. Didn't realize he was
classified info. That's my bad.
He was in for some a couple of, like, kicking nerds going to pepper him with weird onside kick questions.
I thought you were going to call back to yesterday, by the way.
No. I wouldn't waste his time with talking about you and me being able to kick field goals. No, I wouldn't want to do that. But I like the idea of Tyler Algier is just not really built like a kicker. You know what I mean? I don't know if he's the backup kicker or not, but he said he can kick. It's kind of funny.
Feels more like a kickoff specialist. He's got a big boomer,
maybe a touchback.
You know.
He is right, though. Like, nothing has changed more in the game over the last 10 years, like from a rule standpoint, than the kickoff. And just think about the impact of touchback used to be on the 20, now it's on the 30. That's a first down.
They're going
to
change it
again.
That's
a huge deal.
They're going to change it again, too.
To what, do you think?
They're going to put it on 35. I think they're going to put it on 35 next year.
That's crazy, man. Like, that's 5 yards away from an illegal procedure.
I get it.
You just kick it out of bounds. Like, don't even run the risk at this point. I wonder, and I've wondered this for a while, how close we are to them just getting rid of the kickoff altogether. Like,
I'd be fine with that.
I hope they don't. I love it. I love the kickoff. But it seems like that's where the league may be headed. All right, we'll come back. We'll get to what's trending. Thanks again to Marquise Williams for spending some time with us off the top of the show. Hawks win last night. Kennesaw State pulls a huge upset last night as well. We'll get to that. Thanks for being with us on a Trillville Thursday. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Up it comes to Trey. Trey with a bounce pass. Zach Rizichet jams it home. What a pass from Trey. And the Hawks take a 5-point lead. And the next call a timeout.
It was a good first game for us. I mean, that was our first fourth quarter we played all summer. We didn't play any fourth quarter. So it was good the way we executed down the stretch and things like that, because that was important. And we've been focusing on that in practice. So that was just one game.
Yeah, Trae Young after the game last night, he played awesome. Hawks get the win, 121-16. To start the season against the Brooklyn Nets, they're 1-0. And not a surprising performance from Trae, a very Trae-like performance. Efficient, I would say. 30 points, 12 assists, 5 rebounds, only 3 turnovers, which is fantastic. He looked totally under control. And it seemed very obvious early in the game that he was looking to get everybody involved. I don't know that he took a shot until late in the first quarter. His first points might have even been a free throw. But he was just looking to get everybody involved and get in rhythm on offense. And they certainly did that. Great to see Rizichet playing 19 minutes off the bench. Had that dunk there. Hit a basket earlier in the game as well. But for me, if I'm taking a ton away from the first game, like the thing that jumped out to me as, ooh, this is going to be really fun to see,
right,
is what Dyson Daniels can do. Like, he's legit. And not that, you know, talked about it and kind of saw it in the Olympics and all that kind of stuff. 35 minutes, 5 steals. He's playing lockdown defense on the mm-hmm. perimeter. Clearly very tough. Like, made a couple shots.
Yeah.
Missed a couple shots. Sure. Missed a couple free throws. But, he looks like he's going to be a really nice addition to this team.
Well, look, Yuka Okongwu also had a career game. 28 points.
For sure.
11
For
of sure. 12, including 6 of 6 from the free throw line. But that's not your everyday expectation for Okongwu. It was great to see that
great
in the first game,
though.
And you mentioned Trey got
great
him involved. Of all the people he got involved early, Okongwu was 7-7, I think, in the first half, 14 points. And so I agree with you. But
what,
Dyson,
11 of 12 for Okongwu,
yeah.
Those are 11. Of the 11, 9 are just incredible looks because
they're
of,
gimme. Yeah, they're
great.
They're
I'm not taking anything away from him, but that's great from Trey and other guys because Jalen Johnson found him on a
couple
of
them. And
some of
them were his own rebounds as well.
Sure, sure.
But back to your point, like the bigger takeaway is Dyson Daniels. I liked what Okongwu showed me. I don't know if I'm getting that every night. What Dyson Daniels gave me yesterday, maybe not necessarily always 15 points. There's going to be games where it's 8 or 9 or whatever it may be. The effort, though, the attitude, that feels like it's going to be part of this team, at least from him. And then you hope it's contagious for others. I think Jalen Johnson can up the level defensively. I think Reza Shea at times can up the level defensively. Capella had a couple of blocks. I will say this. I talked with you about it. Reza Shea, Jalen Johnson, and Dyson Daniels, all very similar body types, very similar haircuts. Sometimes it's a little tough. The wrong angle, you don't catch that jersey number. I don't know who it is.
Does somebody need a headband or something like that? Like, when you have triplets, you get, like, different haircuts or different outfits. They're all going to have the same clothes
on. Or you do the exact same.
They're teammates. Yeah, or that people just dress their twins up the exact same. This is
five steals, man.
Something that's going to come up. It came up at the end of the year last year. It'll continue to come up. I'm for starting Okongwu. I like having him in the second unit as well, but I'm for starting him. I understand why you're starting Capella at this point, but that would be something that I would think about as the season progresses. Maybe Capella's a trade chip at some point as well.
Right.
Don't have to spend a lot of time on this, but the Nets are just going to be dreadful this year. Like, I guess Ben Simmons is kind of like a goon now. Like, he's just going to, like, foul guys and just loaf around the floor. At least he played, I guess. But that guy doesn't care about the outcome of the game at all. Like, he's just out there throwing terrible passes and not trying very hard and then fouling people kind of sloppily. It was weird.
I think he's in a pretty bad place mentally. I think that,
yeah.
And it comes at him for a couple of reasons. Obviously, the money he has now is one thing. I think I don't know how else to say it. The abuse he took online, whether it's deserved or not, really affected him. He feels like a guy that it would get under his skin more than maybe others.
You know what you should do? Just don't go online. Then you don't have to hear any of that stuff.
Something tells me he heard it in stadium as well.
Sure. People boo you in stadium and all that kind of stuff.
But I don't know if he really pulled away from it.
Off Twitter.
He doesn't feel like
he's $40 million every year.
Focused and dialed in on the sport of basketball.
No.
It feels like he's not in love with the game anymore, right?
He clearly isn't. You watch him play last night, all he does is kind of like jog around and throw terrible cross-court passes. Cam Thomas, by the way, has maybe the most fun job in the NBA where no one expects anything. He can take 30 shots a night and there's no repercussions.
He'll get traded.
Probably.
Yeah.
But how much fun is that? Just being a sniper. Sniper may not be the word for it. Just a high-volume shooter on a team that has no expectations.
He's a bucket getter.
Dude had 36 last night and shot every time he had it.
Yeah.
Just, like, off balance. He damn near shot him back into the game at the end. Like, he was hitting threes that they had no business making. But I always love bad teams' best players. Like, that's a fun job.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a fun job in the NBA.
I was listening to Steve Holman and Mike Connie, and again, congrats to Steve on his 3,000th career consecutive broadcast there. But there'd be times where Cam would get the ball in his hands, and Holman was just like, a shot's going to come up at some point. We're waiting on it, but it's going to go.
Going to shoot at some point in the next 10 seconds. Yeah, and then he did. Anyway, Hawks win. 1-0. Love to see it. Let's hear probably the most fun win of the night last night, locally and nationally, Kennesaw State.
Yards. Bat that ball down. Salter, here it is. Going to the outside. Time expires. Incomplete. And Kennesaw State pulls a massive upset for its first ever FBS win.
So that was final call one.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There was actually 1 second left on the clock. So they had to get everybody back out on the field and actually finish the game. They won that one too. So two final call wins, and they get the win to go to 1-6 last night. Liberty was undefeated.
That's right,
and sort of had a chance at the playoff.
There
possibly.
Was a loose discussion.
Yeah, they weren't going to probably.
No.
But anyway, it doesn't matter. Kennesaw State beat them. Coach Bohannon's going to join us in about an hour from right now, which is going to be a lot of fun, too. And I know there's a lot of graduates and even students of Kennesaw State that listen to this show. Live it up, man. That's awesome. 26.5-point underdogs to win the game. I think that's the second biggest underdog win of the season after Northern Illinois beat Notre Dame. It's great. Owl Nation. What do we say? Hootie who? What do we say? I'm just happy for him. I love it. As a three-time guest speaker in the College of Communication Department at Kennesaw State, I feel like I'm a part of this. I feel proud for everyone involved.
Midweek action at the Fraction, American football edition.
You love it. You love to see it. Anyway, Coach Bo's going to join us in the 12 o'clock hour. We'll come back. We'll get into a couple of different NFL discussions, Falcons specific. Deadline's looming. Trade deadline's looming. There's some teams that have already addressed their needs. Would the Falcons consider addressing theirs? We'll be right back. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Be right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. So we'll talk a bit about that and start looking ahead to the weekend as well. Before we do that, we'll get into a little trade deadline discussion as well. Before we do that, though, before we do any of this stuff, this kind of feels like it's always thankful to have any member of the Falcons coaching staff on the show. And we had Marquise Williams, the special teams coordinator, on like at 11:05 right off the bat. We do that. It was a fun conversation. If you missed it, check it out on the Odyssey app. It'll be up on the website. Subscribe to our podcast, however you want to get it.
It's up. I published
it. And then we jump right into the what's trending. It's always one of those, it's hard to jump right into an interview. It feels like we haven't even said, good morning. How are you? What's
I'm
going
doing
on?
Pretty good. I don't know.
What's up, Abe?
I'm doing strong, man. I feel good today. Good. I might try and run. I don't know.
Okay.
Might be too warm out. I might take a nap instead.
Those are good options.
Both good options.
Both good
I
options.
Have to do laundry before the vacation.
So. Okay. Oh, right.
Big
big cruise coming up.
Yeah.
When do you leave?
So I'm driving to Jacksonville with my dad on Sunday.
Okay.
And then we get on the ship on Monday.
Okay.
And pop off in Jacksonville the next Saturday and then head to the cocktail party.
Great. Yeah. That's awesome. My in-laws, who also love cruises, my father-in-law, I think, likes cruises as much as you do. Loves cruises as much as you do. They told us the other night that they're going on a 22-day cruise after he retires next year. And they're going all kinds of places. They're going to, I think they're leaving from San Francisco and going to Australia.
I was
gonna
ask
going
that,
to
ask that.
Going to Australia. Yeah. They're going to, go through Samoa and Tahiti and all kinds of that region. And then all the way, I don't know. I was like, I mean... I've said this before, nothing against people who like it.
Everyone prefers their own style of vacation.
I'm not interested. I wouldn't want to go on a 3-day cruise, let alone a 22-day cruise through the Pacific Ocean, days at sea. Sounds like just really not my thing.
Boy, but, really bothered by that Titanic movie, huh?
No, I don't know what. I honestly don't know what it is. I mean, we talked about it last week.
But not everyone. First off, not everyone likes being on the water.
I don't
like that.
I just like being on the ground. And we talked about it last week. I don't want to go to space. I don't like flying in airplanes. I don't want to go in a hot air balloon. I don't really like going on boats that much either. Just Earth is what I just the hard ground. That's for me.
Well, we're 9 stories up here, though.
I know. I wish we weren't.
Ground floor studio.
Yeah, I wish we were on the ground
floor. Take
over
that Starbucks. Make
it'd
the
be
people
way better.
Roll up 9 flights to get their Starbucks from now on.
It's entirely too high how high we are up here. But yeah, I bet that'll be a lot of fun.
Are you having a good day?
Me? I have a great day.
Well, I mean, you asked me. I feel I should be asking you.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Awesome day.
Okay. I texted you early. I almost didn't. I always get worried too early.
Oh, I mean, Jack.
I knew you were up.
Jack was up at 5:45 this morning, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. So we've been up. We've been rocking. But yeah, I'm good. It's a Thursday. Football starts tonight. The Hawks won last night. There's plenty going on. Hey, as the trade deadline approaches, it's November 5th. Some of the teams have already made some moves to address needs that they have. Well, I don't. The Jets made a move to make their quarterback happy, and it didn't work. They're 2-5. The Bills added a receiver that they much needed to do. He scored a touchdown his first time out, and I think that helps a team that was already very good get even better. And then you saw there's been some other smaller trades as well, but then you see DeAndre Hopkins going to Kansas City earlier this week. That's obviously something that they desperately need. So the wide receiver market has been robust. wide receivers have been on the move. We haven't seen a lot of other positions move yet. Certainly haven't seen any pass rushers move yet. Falcons very clearly need help there. They're last in the NFL in sacks. We know that. Arch was on with us yesterday talking a bit about some of the silver lining of it, pressuring Geno about half the dropbacks in the game on Sunday. If you look at a bigger picture perspective from season-long numbers, they're 21st in hurries, so still bottom third of the league. They're 25th in quarterback hits, so they're not the worst like they are in getting the quarterback on the ground, but those numbers still aren't super encouraging. So, I mean, the obvious need is to get a pass rusher.
They also don't tell the full story. Like, that's my concern, is like the hurries and the QB hits are irrelevant if they haven't affected that play. And there's plenty of QB hits after the ball's gone, and yeah, you get recorded a QB hit. If it's complete for a first down, that stat should be strike it from the record.
Right.
It does not exist.
If a hurry results in the quarterback
positive play
sliding to the left and hitting a receiver down the field, which is a hurry. Like, if you move him off his butt and you hurry him, he can still complete the pass, which Geno Smith did at a very high rate in the first half and for the entire game against the Falcons last Sunday. So, yeah, I mean, the problem remains. I don't think anybody's watching the games and being like, man, they can't get him on the ground. But boy, are they speeding him up and causing him to make mistakes. If the inverse of this was the Falcons were leading the league in takeaways or were repeatedly getting off the field because they were making the quarterback throw the ball out of bounds, that would be a different story.
Yes.
But that's not the story. The story is, once again, that the Falcons can't affect the quarterback consistently enough, and it's something we've talked about for years and years. There are pass rushers that play for bad teams. Now, are they available? I don't know, because we haven't seen anybody get moved yet. But there's some names out there that I would be very open to the Falcons trying to pursue, and I'm not talking – I know – the obvious ones are the Max Crosbys, because everyone knows who he is, and they suck, and Myles Garrett, because everyone knows who he is, and they're not any good. It's going to be hard to get those guys off the teams that they play for. But there's other guys that are available that are good, not as good as those guys, like Za'Darius Smith plays for the Browns.
Yes.
That's a solid player that could help your pass rush. Arden Key.
All right, so you remember yesterday I gave you the AK
from
the
AK,
Titans.
I assume that's who you're talking
about.
Because
he's, in addition to being a pass rusher, he's also pretty proficient in defending the run as well.
Mm-hmm.
This is a team that just sold out on Hopkins. They are clearly...
if you're trading DeAndre Hopkins, you'll trade anybody.
They are very clearly sellers.
Yeah.
The other one, which goes back to a former teammate of Judon, and there's no reason the Patriots shouldn't also be sellers, is Josh Uche.
Okay.
And that'd be another guy. Again, he's not A-list top-tier guy, but he's paired well with Judon before. I wouldn't mind trying to add that up, because Judon's been a weird conundrum for me, because we always talk about guys getting close. He's the one that feels like he is impacting plays, is getting close.
Yeah.
But then I counter my own argument with, all right, but the quarterback's still finding a way out. Sometimes it's...
He's making plays, though.
Yes.
Like,
agreed.
He actually has a couple sacks, which no one on the team really does.
He also deflected the one pick six.
He deflected a pick six, right. He's actually getting back there.
He's also... the one thing he's doing is forcing quarterbacks to change their arm angle, too.
Right. You can see him making plays, whether he actually gets the quarterback on the ground or not, which he hasn't, a ton, impacting the quarterback's ability to make a play, and that's good. Harold Landry is a name that's out there as well, also plays for the Titans. Azeez Ojulari is a guy that Georgia fans know well, and we talked about yesterday. He's actually having a really good year with the Giants. They're terrible. It's the final year of his rookie deal. So there's guys that I would assume, because these teams aren't any good, would be willing to at least listen for some draft picks or whatever. I understand that financial concerns and financial ramifications exist. Like, you can't just go get whoever you want at any given time.
You're pretty close to being able to do that, though.
I think you owe it to yourself. Like, you do so much to overhaul this offense at the quarterback position. You bring in a new coaching staff, and I think we all feel pretty good about Zach Robinson through seven games. And there's so many positives that, and you make those moves on defense because you want to bolster that side of it. And it's been better in some ways, but overall, and certainly from a pass rushing perspective, it hasn't. I think you owe it to yourself with all the upgrades that you've made to actually get better at the thing that you haven't got better at in years.
So I think that's a really interesting term, that you owe it to yourself. And follow me on this. Do you feel like, and I know we're just coming off the performance on Sunday where you lost to, in my opinion, a lesser than squad. But do you feel like if you can add to the pass rush and get some guys that do the things that we're asking you to do, actually impact the play, if not get a sack on its own, do you think this team can contend? Because if you don't think that they can contend if they add a pass rush, you do not owe it to yourself.
I do.
But
yeah.
If you do, I think then I'm with you.
I think that's the difference.
Yeah.
And who doesn't think that? I think anybody who's watched this team play this year,
I don't.
You don't?
No, I'm agreeing with you. Like, I don't think, I mean, yeah, if they add the pass rush, I don't see any reason. This offense just, we have three straight games where we went 30? Or maybe not. I mean,
it was two, but yeah, like I mean. Sorry,
maybe later this season.
They had 26 the week before, so it was close.
My point is the offense feels as is. And again, I know they were held to 14 by a lesser than squad at home.
Yes.
It still feels like an offense that can get hot if they need to get hot and win you games. If you can get a defense that can kind of match, and they don't have to be the bestie in the league, but you're not really that far from being in the discussion, potentially from being the bestie in the league, if you can affect the quarterback. Because you have the pieces on the outside and on the back end that can take big steps and big advantages from doing that.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, like, you just, and again, what happened Sunday against Seattle feels like an outlier. Hopefully a couple of weeks from now it really proves to be. The way that they played every other game has been tight, and the games leading up to that, they had been pretty explosive offensively. What you need to be able to do is get off the field two or three more times a game on third down and give your offense the ball back earlier and give them more of an opportunity to score points. Because that's where the Falcons' strength lies. The Falcons' strength clearly is on offense at this point, and the identity of the team clearly is on offense at this point. They're going to have to score in order to win. They're not going to have a lot of low-scoring games as the season goes on defensively. But if you can get one more edge rusher, or two, I don't know, if you want to go for it, swing for the fences, get a couple of these guys in here. And I know that they're working with the young guys, and we saw what Damone Harris was on the field. They'll do that too. But if you can do that, then I think you can compete with anybody.
You know what happened on the drive where we got our one sack last week?
What?
Seahawks got an offensive penalty, second and 16, third and whatever, and they punted. Let's not pretend like those plays don't make the difference. And if you add one or two of those over the course of the game, that might be two drives, three drives that get shortened. Those are important.
The only time we try to pretend they don't make a difference is when we're talking about the fact that the Falcons can't do it.
Got close.
Like, well, they're close. I mean, are they? They haven't been good on third down defensively or first and second down. Maybe that's a part of why. Maybe they could get off the field more and get the offense the ball back, score more points, win more games. This hour has been brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com, get a guaranteed offer on your home today, and start packing. We'll roll that football conversation over into the noon hour. NFL No Huddle coming up next. Week 8 kicks off tonight between the Vikings and the Rams right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.